Okay, good evening, everybody. This is our third year doing the beginner's Gemara class. And this year, I decided that we're just going to go straight. We're going to start at the beginning of Maseches Megillah. And so that's the handout which you have. And you'll see that the next couple pages are just this page magnified. So it's easier to read through. So when you actually want to read through the part that we're up to, if it's easier to go to those pages, you'll be able to do that. But I want to just start going over the format and the structure of the page. So what we have here is you'll notice that there's smack in the middle of the top of the middle part of the page. You have the word Megillah in big, yeah. And that's the way the beginning of a Maseches is. It always a Maseches means a tractate. A tractate really means a book of the Gemara, and it always starts the first word. It puts in this fancy little square, and as we if we get to another page that has another Mishnah, and I'll get back to what a Mishnah is in a second. So we'll see how it gets introduced. But this is the beginning of tractate Megillah. Megillah primarily talks about Purim and different laws surrounding Purim. Now, the Gemara is made up of two components. One is the Mishnah. The Mishnah was put together by Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, known as Rebbe, who was the end of the Tannaitic period. All the rabbis of the Mishnah are called Tanaim. And we'll be seeing, some of them are very familiar to us, the rabbis in Bnei Brak that we read about in the story in Pesach were all Tanaim. Rabbi Akiva is a famous one, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehoshua, Rabbi Gamliel. These are figures who are pretty prominent in the Mishnah. You'll also often see Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, that they are talked about in the Mishnah a lot. And then if you look about halfway down the thinner lines, you'll see big letters Gimel Mem. Gimel Mem stands for Gemara, and what the Gemara is essentially conversation surrounding the different laws which are presented to us in the Mishnah, and they were presented over a few centuries post the sealing of the Mishnah, the canonization of the Mishnah. And the Gemara was put together on paper in the manner in which we have it. It's credited to two of the Amoraim, namely Ravina and Ravashi. And Amoraim is the word used to describe the rabbis of the Gemara period. And so you have Tanaim in the Mishnah, and in other texts that were of that time period, like a Brisa. And then you have the Gemara, which is written by or consists of the conversations of Amoraim. Now, if you look carefully on this page, there are a number of little footnote indicators that send you around the page. So, let's just look at the first. So before we get to the footnotes, so on the in the perimeter of the page, so over here you can see comments in a different font. And that font is what's called Rashi font. It's debated whether Rashi, Rabbi Shlomo Yitzchaki, was one of the most well-known commentators. People are very familiar with his commentary on Chumash, and he has commentary on basically all of the Gemara, almost all of the Gemara. So there's a debate, but it's probably not really a debate whether he actually wrote in this font. He probably did not, but because printers use this font. Right. To indicate his comments, it became known as Rashi script. Right. So that's what we have here, Rashi script. And just for your information, on the second to last page in the pamphlet, in the event that you're not familiar with Rashi script, I gave you a little chart about how to learn how to read Rashi script. And you'll see that most of the letters are relatively similar to letters that we're familiar with. There are a few, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, eight letters which are a little different, and so the major difference is noted there. But by and large, anyone who can read regular font of Hebrew should be able to read Rashi script, and you can see which letters are significantly different. The Aleph, Beis, the Zayin, the Samach, the Tzadi, the Shin, a final mem and a final tzadi are significantly different. Okay, anyway, So that's Rashi's critique. And we'll get to Rashi in due time. Okay, so now we're going to look at what some of these little markings in the text of the Talmud are. And when I say Talmud, I mean whether it's Mishnah or Gemara, it's this middle section here. Okay, that has essentially the text which we're going to be studying. So if you look on the first line after that box that says Megillah in it, you'll see that there's an asterisk. And the asterisk sends you straight across the page, in this case to the right, and where it says in Rashi script letters, Yevamos, Yud Gimel, and two dots. Yeah. So what that means is that this is a reference, or this piece that's discussed here in the Talmud here is referenced in a different tractate, in this case Yevamos, on page 13, side 2. We're going to get to that, what that means in a second. And in the event that you aren't familiar with the numerical value of the Hebrew letters, I gave you a chart for that as well. Okay, right above where the learning of Rashi script is. Every Hebrew letter has a value. And if you know the order of the alephbeis, aleph through yud is 1 through 10. Chav through tzadi, it just jumps by tens, so it's 20 through 90. Actually, through kuf is 20 through 100. And then reshin and tuf just jump by 100, so it's 200, 300, and 400. And of course, that's on the chart. So that's one thing. Now, what does that mean? So if you look at the very top, above where it says Yevamos, you'll see that it says on the top of the page, Mesoras Hashas. Mesoras Hashas means that this is the footnote / bibliography of where the topics that are marked with an asterisk appear elsewhere in the canon of the Talmud. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that point, for example, is Yevamos. If you look under where it says Gimel Mem, again, halfway down those thin lines, you'll see two asterisks. Okay, and the first one sends you to the right, where there's actually a long comment in brackets, and we'll get to what all those things mean in due time, but it says, Tosfos Zvachim. Tosfos is another commentary on the Gemara. So it tells us what page in tractate Zvachim it's on, which is Peites dot one dot, which means the first side of that folio, and then it tells you where in the Tosfos commentary that will be found. And as for the left asterisk, if you look, so it's not on the right side. It can't be in the exact same spot because you can't have two footnotes in the same spot. So where is it? It's actually in the immediate empty column to the left, and it's written sideways in this copy where it says Lekamon Dalid Yudtes. Okay, Dalid 1 and Yudtes 1. Mm-hmm. So what that means is, Lekamon means a little further on, it's coming. I like to say Lekamon means it's coming. In this tractate, so it's in Megillah, this will be discussed in a few pages from now, in page 4 and page 19. All right. Now, as far as, so that's the first thing which we need to know. The next indicator which we're going to get to is if you go down from where it says Gimel Mem, about 10 lines down under it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, maybe it's 11 lines. You'll see a little circle in the line. You see a little circle? It's the third. It's right next to the third word on the line. It's right over here. Okay. Amar Kra. Right. The Pasuk says, Lekayim. So you see that little circle? Right. That little circle sends you, that tells you that there is a verse in the Bible, in one of the 24 books of the Bible, in Hebrew, which is called the Tanakh. And in this case, in particular, and of course, a lot of the quotes in the Gemara and Megillah are going to come from the book of Esther. And so if you look immediately to the right, in the right column, you'll see it's in that little right column, like immediately, it says Esther Tes. So it means chapter 9 of the book of Esther. Now, follow that column straight up. Follow that white column straight up. Right. And you'll see at the top of it, it says Torah Or. Right. Torah Or means that this is the section where sources from Torah, but really from all of Tanakh, any place that has a pasuk, that has a verse that we can cite back to the Bible, is going to be indicated there. That's its footnote. So in this case, it's Esther chapter 9. Okay, now I mentioned before about how you know the page number. So if you look at the very top of the page over here, you'll see the letter base. So the first page of Gemara is actually page 2 in Hebrew. But if you were to turn this over, it would actually say 4. Okay, in other words, it's always the back side is double what the front side is, but it won't give you another letter yet. Or in some cases, in some volumes, it will have a bays, and it will have a, either two dots, or it will say bays, amud bays, like two, side two. The next full page of the Gemara will say gimel on the top, and the back would say six, because it's as if it's going, this is page two. The back of this would be, but page two is really, page bays is really page three. And then the back of it is page four. And then page gimel is really page five. And the back of it is page six, because it's double the gimel. So the Hebrew numbers go up by one, but the English numbers will go up by two, because of the way because the numerical numbers, they're double what the Hebrew value equals. Okay, and that's the way the page numbers go. The last thing I want to draw to your attention, go back to the very beginning of this Mishnah section. So again, it's two lines under where you have that big word Megillah, and you'll see on the third word there's a little Aleph. See that little Aleph? It's like a, you know, it's like a footnote marker indicator on the third word on the second line, right over here. Third word on the second line is a tiny Aleph. Okay, now maybe if it's hard to see, you could turn over this page. You could see over here, you'll see it a little more clearly. And it's still kind of small, but it's a little easier to see over here. Okay, you have on the third, on the second full line, you have that little Aleph right on the third word.
It looks like two lines.
Yeah, well, it's an Aleph. It's an Aleph, okay? And that Aleph sends you to the top left. If you look at the very top left of the page, you'll see it says, Ein Mishpat Ner Mitzvah. So it's actually not, so if you look carefully there, you'll see there's two Alephs there. There's Aleph, Aleph. Now, on this page, all of the markers that you have there are, so there are actually two of them. The second one is the Aleph for this page. The first one is a running count of footnotes in the tractate. So the first one of these notes on the next page, which you don't have, but will also say Aleph, but the first marker before it will not say Aleph. It would start with Vav, because Vav is number six. In other words, it's number six in the tractate, but it's number Aleph on that page. Okay, so that's how that counting is done. And what is indicated there? So the first thing that you'll see is Mem Yud Yud. So actually, if you turn to the back page of the booklet that I gave you, to this little chart, where it says important acronyms and references in the footnotes of the Gemara and the text of the Talmud. So the first seven of them are the kinds of things which you'll see in the Ein Mishpat Ner Mitzvah, which is that section we're just looking at. Mem Yud Yud stands for Maimon, which means Maimonides. In other words, it's something which the Rambam wrote. Shin Ayin stands for Shulchan Aruch. That means it's from the code of Jewish law. Tes Vav Shin Yud. Sorry, that should not be a Shin Yud. That should be a Shin Ayin. That is my typo. I apologize. That stands for Tur Shulchan Aruch. The reason why it says Yud is because Yud is right next to the Ayin on the keyboard. And I accidentally wrote Yud instead of Ayin. Okay? And the next four are the actual books of the Shulchan Aruch. And of course it's translated. Ayin Ches stands for Orach Chaim. Yud Vav Dal stands for Yoredeya. Ches Mem stands for Choshen Mishpat. Aleph Hey Ayin stands for Evan HaEzer. And these are some of the things which we will see if we actually follow through with those references. Okay, so that's as far as the main thrust of a page. There is one more thing on the left side of the page. If you see on the furthest most column on the page, you'll see a section. There's like a little bit of a rod in the middle of the page, and then it says in big letters Rabbeinu Chananel. Okay, and then going down and looping around the bottom of the page, you see these comments of Rabbeinu Chananel. So that's his, a little bit of his explanation or commentary on the Gemara. And at the very bottom of the page, you'll see the very last, like, you know, almost full line on the page says Gilyon Hashas. Gilyon Hashas is emendations of Rabbi Akiva Eger, which are also on this page. And there is an indicator in a couple places on the page, it tells you to go to the Gilyon Hashas. So you can see one clearly on the very last of the thinnest lines in the Gemara. Okay, you see that there's, right next to the circle, there's a circle with like a line through it. Do you see that?
On the bottom?
Yeah, it's here. Look on the second of the magnified pages. Okay? You see down here where you have the last of the thin lines? Right before, not the last line of the page that I gave you, but the last of the thin lines. Look here. Look, I'm pointing to it. Right here. So you have, where it says below, you have a circle. The circle means a pasuk, and that is what's indicated on the left side there, where it says the letter, where it says the word shum. Shum means there, so it's where the previous pasuk quoted was, which was Esther. But right before that circle, there's another circle which has like a line through it. It's like a like a no smoking sign.
Right.
That indicates a comment of the Gilyon Hashas, and that's where you would know. And in fact, in the Gilyon Hashas, it says there, the last comment there, Shum, Velo Ya'avor Ksiv, so that's what he's referencing. Okay, what we're going to do now is we're going to begin. Before we begin, I just want to show you a couple of resources which are helpful in the event that you actually want to undertake trying to go through Talmud on your own. So, first of all, there are a couple of important dictionaries which are very helpful to have. This one is it's called the Jastrow Dictionary. It is an incredible piece of scholarship and research that was put together by Professor Marcus Jastrow. I think that anybody who's honest with himself about studying Gemara and doesn't want to use the ultimate cheat book, which is the art scroll, which we'll get to momentarily, needs to have a Jastrow dictionary, because there are simply words that you're just not going to know. So you got to look it up. The next one is another dictionary which I have here, which is called the Practical Talmud Dictionary, which was written by Yitzchak Frank. I actually think that he passed away this year, if I'm not mistaken. It's a wonderful dictionary, Yitzchak Frank. And in yeshiva terms, it is known as the Frank Dictionary. And what he does here is...
I don't remember
doing any of
this. Okay, well... I'm just, and when I went to yeshiva, I don't remember them discussing any of this.
Right, okay, well, okay. You know, yeshiva gives you what it gives you, but sometimes you need to be able to branch out on your own. And you have to realize and recognize that just as if you read a newspaper and you don't know what a word means, you're going to look it up in a dictionary.
Yeah.
So in the Gemara, for sure. Okay. All right. So here we have, here he takes sometimes words, but sometimes phrases. And in addition to just translating a word, he'll take a phrase and he'll tell you how it might appear in the Gemara, how it's used, and how it helps you get, you know, transition from whatever point that's being made to the next one.
They have the two dictionaries in, most of the Hebrew bookstores?
This one for sure, the Jastrow for sure, and this one, you know, it could be gotten, and listen, anything can be gotten online today.
Yeah.
You know, who published this one? This is Feldheim, so you can read it online. Or film. And not only does that have, but the Frank Dictionary also has an additional thing at the end, which I don't remember if the Jastrow has. The Jastrow may have something like this as well. The Jastrow has a nice index at the end, and an additional section, which I don't remember what that additional section is for. Maybe it was. Maybe he added a few things later. I don't know. But the Frank Dictionary has a series of lists of what are called Rashi Tevos or abbreviations. So if you have, it's like acronyms or abbreviations, which sometimes you just don't even know what the letters stand for.
Right.
So a lot of them, for example, start at Aleph Resh. So Aleph Resh Gimel. So Aleph Resh Gimel stands for Amar Rabban Gamliel. A lot of the Aleph Resh stands for Amar Rav the so and so. So Amar Aleph Resh Yud, he has a whole list here. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, could be Rabbi Yehuda said, or Rabbi Yossi, or Rabbi Yochanan, or Rabbi Yeshua.
Right.
And it's usually in the context of what the Gemara is talking about, where you know who the players are, where you'll get what it means. Okay, I don't want to read through all of these right now, but that's something which is helpful to know. Another helpful book that I don't know how well you can get this. I mean, it was published by Feldheim, but I know at some point in time they were out of print. Is this book Understanding the Talmud by Rabbi Yitzchak Feigenbaum? It's a systematic guide to Talmudic structure and methodology. And when we get to some of the examples that he gives, I'll look forward to giving you copies of it, so that you can see how there is actual methodology that the Gemara uses in its logical you know, configurations of different arguments which the Gemara raises in the discussions. For those who are more comfortable with Hebrew, I think I saw that this thing was translated. This is something I picked up when I was in yeshiva in Israel. It's called the Otzar HaTalmud, put together by Yosef Schechter. And it's not so much a dictionary as much as it's a... I guess you can call it a dictionary. I mean, they call it a lexicon dvir, which basically means that Talmudic concepts are explained. So, you know, if you want to know, for example, what... here, you know, so one of the... No, I don't want to do that one. Let me just see here. Lavud. Okay, Lavud. So Lavud is one that a lot of people are familiar with because it has something to do with the height of a wall or the distance of space between poles that might make up a machitza. So it's something which comes up in the context of building a sukkah. Mm-hmm. It's something which comes up in the context of building an eruv. Mm-hmm. That the proximity of two things are considered as if they're kind of connected. So he'll explain that here, for example. And that's one of many examples which are here. I mean, Jastrow does it too, but insofar as you know, explaining concepts specifically not as a dictionary, but more so that you can understand it, he does that. Shachter does that in the Otzar Talmud, which I've always found to be very helpful. Okay, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to start, and you can go to the magnified page, so which would be really the second page in the pamphlet. And here's what we're going to do. The first exercise, which I like to have when we read through this, is to try to figure out if there are any patterns in the text, and if there are patterns in the text, do we recognize them? And also try to note where there are repetitions of words or phrases. Repetitions of words or phrases often indicate, first of all, that there is an idea which is being addressed from two different angles, or if something is repeated word for word, it usually means that the Mishnah or the Gemara is commenting on something that it already said. Okay, sometimes it's repeating it because it's going to explain it, or sometimes it's repeating it but it's asking a question. But the Gemara doesn't give you punctuation marks, yeah. And that is the bane of any of the existence for anybody who's trying to work their way through the Gemara without having training or skills, or even sometimes with training or skills. It's trying to figure out where does the Gemara ask a question, mm-hmm. and where is it explaining, and what does it mean? Because remember, Gemara is all about dialogue. It's dialogue between people. Between the rabbis of the Mishnah, between the rabbis of the Gemara. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to look at the Mishnah, and maybe you're familiar with it, maybe you learned it a long time ago, but we're going to look at the Mishnah, and we're going to try to find where the first clear pause is. Okay, and we're not looking to translate yet. Okay, what we're doing right now is we are looking for punctuation mark. Once we have punctuation mark, we know where an idea ends. Then we can go back and try to figure out what it all means. Okay? So just to make things a little easier, I'm going to read words without inflection, mm-hmm. to help at least navigate so we can try to figure out where the first pause will be. Megillah, Nikres, Be Yud Aleph, Be Yud Beis, Be Yud Gimel, Be Yud Dalet, Bites vav, lo pachos velo yoser krachin hamukafin choma mimos Yehoshua bin nun korin bites vav kfarim vaayaros gdolos korin biyud dalid ella shakfarim Makdimin liyom haknisa ketzad chol liyos yedalid b'sheni. I'm going to stop there. Did anything stand out as being a repeat, an obvious place to stop, or anything of that nature? There were a number of repeats, so I'm putting you on the spot here. There are a number of repeats. Okay, you want to take a stab at any of them?
Yeah, Korin.
Okay, Korin. All right, let me see. We had Korin on line 3, and we had Korin on line 4. Good. So Korin, good. What else is a repeat? Another repeat was actually Be Yudalid and Be Tesvav. Okay, so those happen to be connected to the phrase Korin Be Yudalid and Korin Be Tesvav. Okay, good. Anything else was a repeat? So look at towards the very beginning. At the end of the first line, you have Lo Pachos Velo Yoser. Okay, so you have the word Lo. Lo is also a break. And one thing which I neglected to mention, but I'm going to mention now, is that when you have a Vav is very often an indicator that there is a reason to pause. Now, there are two different kinds of Vav. Vav is a prefix. Vav means and. So if any Hebrew word that begins, I should say, most Hebrew words that begin with the vav means and. So there's two different kinds of and. Okay, I could say there's red, white, and blue, right? The colors of the Israeli flag are blue and white. So that and is connecting of two similar ideas, okay? And then there's another kind of and, which is that there's a bookcase there, and there's a coffee pot over there. Okay, so those are two different ideas, which, you know, I mean, maybe in both cases I'm pointing out that there's something there, but I'm not saying there's a Mishnah Berurah and there's a Mishnah, right? Because that would be, there's a Mishnah Berurah and a Mishnah. There's a bookcase, and over there there's something else, and. Okay, and that's what it is. Or, you know, I like pizza, and that's a closet over there. So that and is not connecting two ideas, it's two different ideas. And it's showing you clearly that there are two different ideas. So anytime you see a vav in the Gemara, you have to ask yourself, which kind of vav is it? Is it a vav which is connecting two things, like blue and white? Or is it a vav which is saying, this is one thing, and that's something else? Okay, so in this case, when we have lo pachos, the lo yoser, so the question is, what is pachos and what is yoser? So I'll cheat and I'll tell you. Pachos means no less. And yoser means more, okay? Or another way to say it, because we're actually dealing with a different topic. It happens to mean earlier or later, okay? So that's what it means. So what kind of vav is that? Therefore,
an and that would be like together, now and then.
Okay, right. So it's actually a little bit of both, really, because it's not you're saying it's meaning they're related. They're more of a contrast,
right?
But they happen to not. But it's not a connection. It's not blue and gold or blue and white,
right?
Okay, it's no less and no more. So
right.
So that's a. But once you see that there's lo pachos v'lo yoser, then you have to understand because they're a contrast to each other. You're definitely going to have a pause after. The lo yoser.
Right.
Okay. So now that we've determined that there's going to be that pause after the word v'lo yoser, so now let's go back. And now that we have that, so we have to make our way through that very first line in this Mishnah. Okay. And the very first line of the Mishnah tells us. Now we also have clearly a very repeated format of most of that first line. Bi yud aleph, bi yud beis, bi yud gimel, bi yud dalet, bi tesvav. Be means in, usually, and all of those other things are numerical values. Okay, so if you remember our chart, so how much is yud?
10.
Yud is 10. So yud aleph therefore is going to be 11. Yud beis is 12. Yud gimel is 13. Yud dalet is 14. And then the last thing which they gave, instead of saying yud and hey, because it's God's name, the formula that's used to describe 15 is tes and vav, which is 9 plus 6. Okay, so that's how we get it. And yeah, any idea where else we have tes and vav meaning 15?
After Korin.
No, aside from the Gemara, in Jewish life. So we have two dates on the holiday which are actually known by their date. Tu B'Shvat,
right,
and Tu B'Av. Mm-hmm. What does it mean, Tu? It means the 15th, Tesvav. There are other two holidays which are also on the 15th, and that's Pesach and Sukkot are both on the 15th. So the way that we write down the date is Tesvav Nisan and Tesvav Tishrei. So that's, anyway, so what does it mean? Megillah Nikreis. What is Megillah most likely referring to? Since this is the Maseches Megillah, it's referring to Megillas Esther. So what are we talking about Megillas Esther? When is Megillas Esther read? On Purim. Okay, so what the Mishnah is saying is that there are circumstances under which the Megillah Nikreis could be read on a different date. Purim is on the 14th of Adar. That's when the Megillah is typically read. But there are halachic exceptions to that rule. Megillah, Nikreis, and that's what we have here. The Mishnah is giving us 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 dates that could serve as the date on which the Megillah is read. Megillah, Nikreis, Bigyud Aleph, could be read, Bigyud Aleph, on the 11th of, what month is Purim in? Adar. Okay, and that's what all these are. These are all dates. Megillah is read, Bigyud Aleph, on the 11th of Adar, Bigyud Bey is on the 12th of Adar, Bi'yud Gimel on the 13th of Adar, Bi'yud Dalit on the 14th of Adar, Bitezvav on the 15th of Adar, Lo Pachos, the Lo Yoser, not less or not more. That's what the literal meaning of those words is, but since we're talking about dates, it means not earlier and not later. Okay? So that's the first point which the Mishnah makes, which is fascinating because most people, if they haven't learned this Mishnah, don't know that. They think that typically think that Megillah has to be read on Purim only. And those who are familiar with the practice of cities like Yerushalayim, I don't know if there's another one in Israel. Maybe Akko. I don't know how old Akko's wall is, but maybe people in Akko, I don't know, read the Megillah on the 15th of Ator, which is a day called Shushan Purim. So people are familiar. Certainly people know about Yerushalayim. Okay, in Jerusalem, the Megillah is read on the 15th. So people know that it can be read either on the 14th or the 15th. Those are understood. But the 11th and 12th and 13th, that sounds a little crazy. How could it be that happens? So the Mishnah explains. Okay? Okay, but before we get to the Mishnah explaining, so the next point that we noted before, even though I didn't focus on it, is that we have another repeat on the next line. So let's go through this Gemara again. So again, we're after V'lo Yoser. Krachin namu kafin choma mimos Yeshua benun korin betesvav. So we had that tesvav. That's a repeat. Okay, and we also know that korin, because we read already, is a repeat. What else are we familiar with from that line? Krachin namu kafin choma mimos Yeshua benun korin betesvav.
That it's the 15th.
Well, okay, so that's something which we already saw. Tesvav means the 15th. Is there another phrase in those words which is familiar? Okay, so the answer is there's a name there, a name of a person, Yoshua ben Nun. Okay, so that should at least, if you're familiar with that name, then the his name should be an indicator. All right, well, I know that when I see Yoshua ben Nun, that's the name of a person. B, who that is. And that will be a phrase that's separate from Korin B'Tesvav, which leaves us with four words. Krachin Amukafin Choma Mimos. Okay, so now we need to understand what those words mean. So in the event that we don't know what Krachin are, Krachin means cities, large cities, okay, which are Mukafin Choma. Okay, there's a Choma. So what is a Choma? Choma means a wall. Mukafin means surrounded. So Krachin, Hamukafin, Choma, cities which are surrounded by a wall. Mimos, Yoshua ben Nun. So Mimos means from Yamos. What is a Yom? A day. So Mimos means from the days of Yoshua ben Nun, Korin B'Tesvav. Okay, so what is that? What's that rule? Cities that are surrounded by wall from the time of Yoshua ben Nun, from the days of Yoshua ben Nun, they read Megillah on the 15th. Okay, now, so we have a good question. The wall that's around Yerushalayim now, who put up that wall? I forget the guy's name. what's his name? Sultan, what's his name? Okay, well, I forget. Whatever his name was. God, what is his name? Not Sultan. Okay, that's embarrassing. Definitely not Hammurabi. I forget his name. Anyway, but he's credit. But when is that? Like 400, 500 years ago. So what do you mean? How do you know Yerushalayim was? Well, so we know that Yerushalayim had a wall back in the day. In the time of King David, it had a wall. So right. I mean, we
it was
look,
a wall city.
Right. We're not going to start carbon dating the wall,
right.
But we have an idea. So Yerushalayim was a walled city. So therefore, Yerushalayim does it. So that's the first rule outside of the 14th of Adar. The next rule is, so again, we know where the next pause is because we have a repeat. We have Korin B'Yadalad. So that leaves us with 1, 2, 3, and then Korin B'Yadalad. Kfarim V'Ayaros Gedolos, Korin B'Yadalad. Okay, so Kfarim V'Ayaros Gedolos. So are you familiar with any of those words?
Korin and
Well, Korin B'Yadal, we already know, means they read on the 14th. So what are Kfarim V'Ayaros Gedolos? So Gadol means big, correct. And what Ayaros is plural of the word Ir. Ir means a city. So Ayaros Gedolos means big cities. So now we're just left with one word, Kfarim Shehak. I'm sorry, Kfarim. Kfarim means villages. So you have smaller towns and bigger cities, but bigger cities which are not surrounded by walls, because we already talked about the cities which are surrounded by walls. From the time of Yehoshua ben Nun. And why it's from the time of Yehoshua ben Nun is an interesting question, but the Mishnah doesn't explain. So all of those communities that are not walled cities, they are supposed to read the Megillah on the 14th. Why? Because that's when Purim is. That's the right day to do it. So we're going to just do one last point over here, and then we'll stop for tonight, and we'll continue this next time with respect to trying to understand the rule. Because obviously, if you've covered walled cities, and you've covered big cities, and you've covered small cities, then you've basically covered everybody. And if you just said that the only times they read are on the 15th or on the 14th, respectively, then how do you explain the 11th, the 12th, and the 13th? Okay, so we're not going to do that tonight, but we're left with the remaining words, which I'm only going to tell you in the interest of time that they're going to end before the word Ketzad. And the reason they're going to end before the word Ketzad is because the word Ketzad means how. How does this happen? How can you explain this? So what does that leave us with? It leaves us with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Ela shakfarim magdimin liyom haknisa. Okay? Now, the word Ela is already a calling card. Ela means a pause because Ela means rather.
Right.
Okay, so in other words, there's an idea which came beforehand, which we knew anyway, because we saw the repeat, Korin B'Tesvav and then Korin B'Yadalad. So we know there's a pause there, Korin B'Yadalad. And by the way, note after the Yadalad, you see that little circle with the, that's the Gilyon Hashas. Before the Gimel, that little circle with a line through it, that's the Gilyon Hashas that I pointed out. That was the comment at the very bottom of the page of the Gemara. And the Gimel sends us to the Ein Mishpat, near mitzvah, the top left. Good, I saw you looking at it. That's right. Okay, so we have five words, rather. Ela, shakfarim, makdimin, liyom, maknisa. Well, kfarim is the word we just had, the previous line, immediately love it. What's the kfarim? Do you remember? Small villages. Okay? Makdimin means that they go earlier, liyom, haknisa. So yom means a day, and Knesa means gathering, just like a Beis HaKnesses is a house of gathering, even though we refer to a Beis HaKnesses often as a synagogue, but it literally means a house of gathering. Liyom HaKnesa means the day of the gathering, which is understood to be market day. So what does that mean? It means that the people in the villages, who may not have even had a minion in town, we don't know, or maybe they just didn't have somebody who could read the Megillah.
Right.
So what would they do? They would read the Megillah a couple days early. So let's say, and this is what the rest of the Mishnah talks about. If Purim falls out, so what were market days? The market days were understood to be Mondays and Thursdays. So if Purim falls out on a Monday, so then they go into the village, they go into town on Monday, they read the Megillah. If Purim falls out on Tuesday, and there might be some days that Purim can't fall out, I'm not even going to start getting into the science of it, but if let's say Purim falls out on Tuesday, well, they're going into the market on Monday, they'll hear it on Monday.
Yes.
If Purim falls out on Wednesday, they go into the market on Monday, they hear it on Monday.
Right.
Okay,
etc.
Right, so they're not actually not allowed to read it on the 15th. So the people who go in, the people who live in villages, they cannot read it after. They cannot read it on the 15th. The 15th is exclusively what?
They read it on the 14th.
They can read on the right. If the 14th is Thursday, then they can read it on the 14th.
Right. But if okay? not, then they would have to make sure it's read before.
Correct. Okay. And the way that it would be read on the 11th is if Purim fell on Sunday, then right. you'd have to go 3 days back.
Right.
Because Thursday would have been the 11th. Right. Okay, and that's the idea which we have here. And again, the word Ella means rather shakfarim, that the people in the village, Makdimin, Liyom Haknisa, that they go earlier on the day of the gathering, again, market day, and then the Mishnah gives all the permutations to explain how this would work out. And the main thing which we'll see is that for the people who live in non-walled cities, they can read it earlier, but never later.
Right.
And as for the people who live in walled cities, so it's assumed that there's somebody in town who knows how to read the Megillah, so they'll be reading it on the 15th, with rare exception. I think the only exception to that is if Purim falls on a Friday, and the 15th is Shabbos, I think they don't read it on the 15th, if I'm not mistaken. I don't think they read the Megillah on Shabbos itself. Okay, so that's what we have. Yeah, so what we just to summarize what we learned tonight, we learned about some of the dictionaries. I didn't even open the article to explain and show how that works, so we're not going to do that now, but I did bring it. And we noted that when we read through the Gemara, it's helpful to have a dictionary for words we don't know, but the things that we're looking for is how are the indicators in the text that show us at least, first and foremost, where there's a pause. And once we have a pause, we can figure out what that punctuation mark is, and also how to work a little backwards to translate either word by word or phrase by phrase to understand what the Mishnah is trying to teach us. And when it comes to the Gemara, which we haven't gotten to yet, but we'll see what the Gemara is trying to teach us. Okay, and we'll do one thing at a time. But the main goal is to work slowly, to find those pauses, to translate the phrase, and to understand what the Gemara is in fact telling us. Okay, thank you.